baseball in this hour. First, we got to talk about your lawn, and you need just a little help to keep your lawn. And you know what? It's not that you're not capable. It's that there are things happening beneath the soil, you know, beneath that top layer, that really you can't measure because you don't have the tools. You know who does? Grass nerds. They took a soil sample analysis to make sure that what's going on beneath your grass, that they understand what it is, so they know when they treat your lawn, they're treating it correctly. They're not doing something that's not going to work with your particular, the makeup of your soil, the chemical balance of your soil. That's what Grass Nerds does. They're local. All they do is upstate South Carolina lawns. They have a massive, massive retention percentage, like well over 90%. And the reason is because people understand there's differential value in somebody who cares about South Carolina lawns, upstate South Carolina lawns, treating upstate South Carolina lawns. Bottom line, this is a wonderful company. These are great folks here. They've got price points for everybody, treatments for everybody. If you need a little help getting your lawn ready for fall, getting ready for the dormant season, they can help you to and through that. GrassNerds.com. Go ahead, GrassNerds.com. Try it today. Keanu, perfect example of what I'm talking about with ceiling and floor. We've discussed Alabama. We mentioned their quarterback battle yesterday and how we're not really sure what to do with Alabama. This is from yesterday, Pete Nakos from On3, inside Alabama's first scrimmage. Again, they've got a battle between Austin Mack and Keelan Russell. And I'm reading a couple of paragraphs here from this bigger picture story about Alabama, but I can already tell you who is positioned at this point to win this quarterback job by the way this is written. Sources who watched Thursday's scrimmage said both quarterbacks had strong moments, but it was the former five-star recruit Russell who was making plays. That has been the buzz for most of camp, with Mack stringing together consistent day after consistent day, while Russell has moments where he dazzles. With Alabama still working through some preseason challenges with its offensive line, Russell's ability to stretch plays with his legs has been evident, sources told On3. One source told On3 that Russell looked like a stud at Thursday's scrimmage. The second-year quarterback threw multiple touchdowns and also had an interception. Wonderful. Kalen DeBoer knows quarterbacks. He knows what his team needs at quarterback. I believe that, okay? I also believe he likes floors because everybody likes floors. And what I just heard is that Russell makes a lot of big plays. He dazzles in moments. He was better in the scrimmages. But Mack is the more consistent player. Fans see and hear the stuff with Russell and they go, yes, we want that. Bring it. Yes, we want to do that. Coaches see the interception. Coaches see the inconsistency and they go, I can't scheme for it. I would rather play Austin Mack, who I know what I'm getting, so I can scheme for what I'm getting every single day, the consistent day after day after day. He's consistent. I can sell that to the rest of the team. Now, if he doesn't play well in games, I'm not saying that Russell's not going to get a chance to play in games, and if Mack doesn't play well in games, that you shouldn't play Russell, okay? There are times where you need to go for ceiling because the floor guy's not it's not working. Those two paragraphs tell me that the fans are going to want Russell and the board's going to go with Mack.
Questioning you, if you were an Alabama fan and we're at this point in the offseason where football is literally about to kick away within a couple of weeks, would you be nervous that there is a quarterback battle still going on and you didn't have a clear-cut favorite to win the position at this point in the offseason?
I wouldn't. For this reason, first of all, we don't really know. A lot of it is what we're told. We're trusting people who have seen, and we're just sort of going off our priors. Okay, so that's one thing that we have to take into consideration. We don't really know, but one of the things that I would find exciting about the Alabama quarterback battle is it does feel like you're not making a bad choice. You're not going from a bad choice or a good choice. Or, you know, like in 2014, I don't think it was quite like this, but Clemson fans would argue that you had a good young choice and a bad old choice. And Clemson went with the bad old choice. Now, again, I think that's a little disrespectful to Cole Stout. I think it is a lack of understanding the situation that Deshaun Watson would have been thrown into willy-nilly. What happened when Deshaun was named the starter, where Cole kind of checked out, as evidenced by the fact he threw two pick sixes against Georgia Tech when Deshaun got hurt. That feels like that feels like cautionary tale. So I think I don't agree with that framing all the way. I understand where it comes from. At Alabama, you don't have that. You don't have like the older, been in the program guy going against, wow, this guy's unbelievable. The plays that he makes are unbelievable, but he's not quite as consistent. You don't have to deal with that. At Alabama, you pick either one of those guys, you're thinking you got a good chance to win. You got a high-level program guy who's been in the system multiple years, who's executed well in Mac, and you've got Russell, who's got just absolutely gangbusters playmaking ability. So, some cases, I would agree, yes. In fact, if you're a Clemson fan and, you know, after the scrimmage tomorrow in the stadium, if they're still not ready, or if they close camp and are not ready to name a quarterback, I think you would probably be right to go, I'd rather somebody have stepped up.
Yeah.
And really, I think we know Vezina's going to start. You'd rather Vezina have stepped up. I think by the close of camp, by the time they actually get to practice, I think they will have named a start. I think Clemson will have named a starter. I don't know if it happens tomorrow or Monday or whatever, but I think Clemson will have named a starter. For the reason that I just don't see, unless Vezina has proven himself not to be an option, I just don't see the upside to Tate Reynolds going out there first and 10 from the 25 with 15 minutes on the clock in Baton Rouge. I don't see the upside in his first competitive football game basically in 2 years being in that environment. I don't understand it. So I understand they want to have the battle. They want to give Reynolds a chance, whatever. I still can't see this ending up any way other than Vezina gets the nod. I'm kind of there with Alabama too, that call it seniority, call it consistency, whatever you want to say, that ultimately that will decide who gets the ball first. It might not decide who gets the ball in the second half. It might not decide who gets the ball in game 4 or game 9 or in the postseason or next year. It might not decide any of that. But I think when we're talking about game 1, you can bring along young players little by little and not throw them into the fire and lose a potential winning player in your quarterback that doesn't have as high a ceiling. I think all of those things can be true. All of them.
Well, you would say, now correct me if I'm wrong, you would say Christopher Vezina was a clear-cut favorite to win the starting job at the start of the offseason. You would say that, right?
Yes.
So do you really think that Tate Reynolds had a chance to even have a fight within this QB battle?
I think he is being given opportunity. But I think Christopher Vezina is the quarterback that will determine who wins and loses the job.
So you're basically saying this is his job to lose?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Vezina, I think the almost exclusively the older player is the one that decides. And if the older player does what's required, the younger player's not going to win the job. The younger player wins the job when the older player doesn't report for duty, either physically or mentally or whatever the case, just doesn't get the job done. That's the only way that the younger player, sort of the challenger here, wins. If you think about it like this, like Jeopardy, I watch Jeopardy a lot. They all start with zero, but I think there's an inherent advantage to the returning champion who, like, knows how to win the game and has already won the game. Like, you have some experience that can help you in these moments.
All right, then.
So, and I feel like Vezina almost, he had a little bit more in the bank. Like, he started with $1,000.
Well, the way that it's portrayed within the media and reports is that that's Dabo's guy, you know? He wants to give him a chance. So, from my perspective, it seemed like he was a clear-cut favorite and that basically it was his job to lose. I didn't really think that Tate Reynolds stood a chance. Now, I've heard reports that he looks strong. He's gotten bigger. He's working out with the linebackers and things such as that. I just... I figured, and just based off of what I've seen and what I've heard, is Vezina's job to lose, and that's where we are right now.
I agree with that, 100%. Now, I want to talk about some quarterbacks who aren't in battles.
Okay.
This is an interesting piece on ESPN.com. This was Adam Rittenberg. I believe it was Monday. I read it, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday this week, and I thought some of this stuff is just really fun. Well, we got to talk about it. Some quarterbacks I was intrigued about that I personally like. I was wondering if some of these quotes would back that. Some quarterbacks I have questions about. I was wondering if some of the quotes would also have questions. This is, for example, this is what they say about Lenore Sellers. 31 quarterbacks in the power conferences that they've got write-ups on here. Okay. These are quotes about Sellers. This is from two different SEC defensive coordinators. Okay. Coordinator number one said, quote, "He really struggles to process in the middle of a game." I kind of agree with this. When you move him around or you move things around on him, he just really struggles. Some of that, I think, is, well, I'll get to in a second. But I think Kendall's system, if Kendall can be like, hey, you do this or you do that or take off running, if he can get him to do that, I think the kid could be scary. He's so hard to bring down. This is the second coordinator says, quote, "Kendall will make it a little bit more friendly. He's not going to force him to be something he's not, which I felt like at times he was last year. They've got to try to win games. You're not a pocket passer. The best thing you do is take off and run because no one can tackle you." Close quote. Both of those quotes are basically the same. They're reliant on the system to basically say, don't do the things that got you killed last year. When you move him around and you move things around on him, he struggles. When your offensive line, this is the thing that quarterbacks have to deal with all the time, especially, I think, a running quarterback. When your offensive line is a doo-doo sandwich, when your offensive line can't do jack, okay, then ultimately your eyes come down a lot, like really quickly. You're at least conscious about what's in front of you. The inverse of that is when your offensive line is completely trustworthy, you can sit in that pocket and survey the defense, the second and third levels, and find seams in the defense and look at where your receivers are and all that stuff. You could do all that if your offensive line is good. His eyes were coming down last year. That's why when you confuse him, when you move stuff around, you mess something up post-snap on Lenore Sellers last year. You mess something up post-snap on a guy that knows his offensive line is not very good. His eyes are coming down. He's probably going to miss it because he's not able to watch that. He's scrambling. He's running for his life. He's going backwards, whatever the case. So all the stuff he said there, legitimate. Now, here's some of the guys that were ranked ahead of Sellers on this on the quarterback power rankings we talked about yesterday. John Mateer is one. This is what an SEC defensive coordinator said. Quote, "His Washington State tape was way better than I played last year." Walt talked about that yesterday. "But he's a really good quarterback. You've got to do a good job against him." Another coordinator says, "Mateer's a good player. He's athletic. There's some balls he throws very well. And others I think he's just okay at. I don't know that he always reads it the best, but that offense is suited well for him and they get a lot out of him. There were some games he looked outstanding last year and others where he looked just okay," end quote. See, to me, like, to put him third and Sellers seventh, that's a very similar take on similar players. I would have them, like, joined at the hip, Mateer and Sellers, in my opinion. This is what I say about Marcel Reed, defensive coordinator. We'll take a break, do a couple more of these, and we come back. "The people that have been able to stop the run and play zone defense, he's had a hard time against. Talked about you got to do a good job of confusing him." Another coordinator said, quote, "He still thinks he's a true quarterback, and we want him to, like, keep thinking that way. He doesn't really want to run, but when he does, it's the scariest part," end quote. I'm not buying this. If you want to fade Texas A&M after reading that, be my guest. Tougher schedule, quarterback who's maybe not comfortable in his own skin, doesn't know what he wants to be, new system. That's maybe not as friendly to just sort of make the quarterback run. Like, Colin Klein's going to run his quarterbacks. Now he's gone to Kansas State. I would buy Mateer and Sellers more than I would buy Marcel Reed right now. There's a couple of these I want to read when we come back. 654-ROAR is the number. Back in a flash.
thoughts.
Our hosts listen to themselves talk all day long.
Make your thoughts known
and vote on all of our Ingles poll questions. Find them in the poll section on our website
at theroarfm.com.
The Roar.
The Roar, where every day is game day.
Let me tell you about our friends at Buff City Soap. I talked about this. My car was smelling yesterday. You know, a lot of people put those, like, the things in your cars, like the new car smell or whatever that is. I sprayed the room spray, the Narcissist room spray from Buff City Soap, and it took the smell out, whatever it was. It just smelled a little funky. It took the smell out, and then I got up this morning, and I got in the car, still smelled that way. I'm talking like 15 hours later. Awesome. Loved it. BuffCitySoap.com. You can see all the fall scents that are there, the pumpkin spice, and all the great fall options for you. Also, the new products. The room spray is one, a good one, but also the classics, the laundry soap and the dryer balls and the bar soap and the hand soap and those types of things. The soap-making parties at Buff City Soap, that you watch them make the soap right in front of you, it's part of the experience. To learn more, go to BuffCitySoap.com. Two locations, Shops at Green Ridge, Harbaugh Village here in the Upstate.
Loud, loyal, and locked in. The home for Clemson sports fans.
As we progress, I want to go to the ACC to quarterbacks for a second. And I want to make a statement. It probably requires a little more conversation. But I'm going to argue that the top of the ACC at the quarterback position, it might not be as deep this year of really tremendous players as some previous years that we've seen, maybe even last year. I think there are four legitimate capital D dudes.
Give them to me.
Dude, like, I would ride or die with you any day. Quarterbacks that everybody's afraid of. Darian Mensah's one.
Stud.
Okay.
Out of the question.
Six picks last year, 34 touchdowns, 67% completion, and now he's got a better system.
Mm.
I mean, probably going to be really good.
That's going to be really good.
Yeah. This is what an ACC GM said in this Rittenberg piece. He's an accurate passer. He can deliver it off platform well. He's athletic enough, obviously, to get outside the pocket and pick up some chunk yards. But I just think he's a smart player. He did a pretty good job of not taking bad sacks with his athleticism, his ability to deliver outside the pocket, his efficiency in getting the ball to his playmakers' hands. And he's just going to make the smart throw with the playmakers around him. Him and Tony being able to link up. That's a really good duo. End quote.
Scary duo.
Talked about. I mean, really, really good, okay? He's just good. JKS is another one from Cal. Jaron Kiawe, Sagapolitelli. ACC coach said, quote, he's a bigger guy than I thought and he could throw it. I mean, that guy could be a first pick at some point if they win because he can play. I think even if they don't win, he could be that because he can play. He made throws against us that we're hitting him. We're in his face. He was throwing dimes. He's standing in there. He's throwing. He's accurate. He was good. Another ACC defensive coordinator said he may be the purest quarterback of all in the league. So you're talking about Mensah's the best player, okay? Then you have a coach who's saying that JKS is actually the best pure talent, like pure quarterback. Okay.
That's a big statement.
Now we got, okay, Mensah's our best player in the league. He's our standard bearer, but he might not even be the best quarterback from a pure talent standpoint. Might be JKS. Then we get Kevin Jennings from SMU. And here's what they said about Kevin Jennings. One guy says, quote, we can't ever defend him. He kills us every game. It's ridiculous. That could be a lot of people. Then he says, another defensive coordinator says, the way he could contort his body and throw the ball is very unnatural. It's just like, how in the world did he make that throw? That arm, it just pops off his hand. He, to me, is the hardest one to defend. He looks like you can break this kid in half and knock him out of the game. He just contorts his body in awkward ways. It just works for him, so he's hard to get to, end quote. So you're talking about a very particular set of skills, Liam Neeson, that make him impossible to defend, according to the first coach. There's another coach quoting here, said, best quarterback we saw in the ACC. Okay. So that's Jennings. Hardest to defend. So you got Mensah's the best player, but maybe not even the purest quarterback, and maybe not even the hardest to defend. Right?
So Mensah's the best Mintz is the best-looking player.
He's the standard bearer. He's the standard bearer in the league. He's the standard bearer in the league right now, quarterback. Yes.
And then you got JKS as the best pure quarterback, is what they're saying. The best pure quarterback.
Right. In terms of thrower of the ball.
And then you move on to Jennings. You just can't guard him at all.
Toughest to defend.
Toughest to defend.
That's a nightmare. We ain't even got to the fourth one yet. This Ben Milstead is going to love this. I really should have saved this for when Ben was in here so that Ben could, like, do a little dance. Get down tonight. So Ben could do, you know, just spin around and throw a party. I think way more people should be talking about C.J. Bailey from NC State. Now, he doesn't have the weapons that those guys do, or maybe even the systems that those guys do. C.J. Bailey threw from one year to the other, okay? Year one over year two as a starter. Threw for 700 more yards. Added 4 points on his completion percentage. Had 8 more touchdowns and 1 fewer interception. Definitely progressed from year one to year two. These are the quotes about Bailey. And I'm going into the season, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, where are the dark horse teams in the country that could get to conference championship games? Hard to find one in the SEC because the top line seems pretty set. The ACC is a league where you could see a team sneak in. The Big 12 is a league where you could see a team sneak in. I think the Big 10, there are a couple of interesting teams out there that people aren't talking about that could find a way into the conversation. I think USC is one that could find a way in. I know Walt and I talked about them yesterday. So you have these sort of dark horse teams or teams that aren't considered in that elite group. To me, the most fascinating team of all is NC State that's in that group. NC State has the easiest schedule, and C.J. Bailey is a quarterback that I think is up there with these other three guys. Here are the quotes on C.J. Bailey in this story. And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about Bailey, I'm thinking about NC State, how high am I going to put him, all this stuff. And here are the quotes I'm reading, and I'm like, yes! I understand nobody wants to give Dave Doran anything, but you got to give him C.J. Bailey. Here are the quotes. His pocket awareness, he just has a clock and feels things. Some guys scramble or they're in the pocket and they see the blitz. His eyes are on his receivers, and some guys aren't like that, man. This is Dave Doran talking about this. As soon as they start feeling it, you see him put their head down. His eyes are always up. It's like a point guard. You can see the court without looking at guys. Here's what the other coaches are saying. Quote, we probably undersold him playing him last year, and he was incredible in our game. He's one of the best in the league. Another coach said he proved himself a little bit last year. The other one says, Bailey's talented as bleep, man. He's more talented than Mensa. This is a GM in the ACC.
That's a big statement.
Exactly.
That's a huge statement.
And he's getting smarter. You saw some growth in his game last year. He made better decisions. He understands he's got to take care of his body and not take big hits, especially more of a slender frame, end quote. So, again, I'm setting up the ACC now. We're talking about this top tier of quarterbacks. Darian Mensah is the standard bearer. He's like offensive player of the year caliber guy. I know Haynes King won it, but he's that caliber of player in the league. He's putting up those types of numbers. Offensive MVP. He's the obvious choice for preseason offensive MVP. But JKS might be a purer talent. Kevin Jennings might be harder to defend. And C.J. Bailey might be more overall gifted than Mensah. I don't remember a time where you could look at the league quite like this at the top and go, all right, that guy's clearly number one. You could go back to like Lamar Jackson and Deshaun, like that sort of the 2015, 16, 17 era of ACC quarterbacks where there were a lot of guys that were really talented. And even some guys at some lesser teams that were just problems. Kenny Pickett's in there, eventually gets in there at Pitt. I mean, you had some guys at some of these places that could legit play, all right, that you wouldn't think about. But, you know, the guys at the top. Mintz is at the top. But people are talking about these other guys like they're maybe better than Mensah. league's going to be deeper at the top of quarterback than we've seen in a while. These are all, like, really talented dudes with offenses that are going to giddy up and go. Walt wants to chime in on this. At Deptula's Rage. 3-7, you can hear him wax poetic on all these things. Hey, Walt!
Quark, Keanu. I'm still trying to figure out what Keanu was doing in the women's bathroom. I'm not sure about that. He gave me an answer, but I'm still... I think his answer was a little suspect. He may have set the camera. But in terms of this, look, you can find my ACC quarterback rankings. I did like a month ago. They're up on the website, and that's exactly the order I had them in at the top. Exactly, and I would agree with most of what was said there. I think the best pure passer is without question Saga Politelli. The Bailey thing is so fascinating to me because. Why is he there? I mean,
yes.
I don't know why he's still there. I don't know why he didn't go anywhere else, especially because all of the surrounding talent left. His star left tackle left for South Carolina. His star running back left for Texas. His star receiver left for Southern California. And he stayed, which I don't know. He's like the sole survivor. I don't know anybody else who would have done that under those circumstances. So I guess I'm giving him credit for that. I mean, I can't imagine that NC State came up with like $5 million to pay him. Maybe they did. I don't know.
He's got to be making 25% of their budget, right? I mean, he's very talented. Florida guy. Like they've imported a couple of receivers that played with him. So they're trying to sort of get the game back to get the gang back together. I know that, but to me, I feel bad putting Bailey at four because he feels better than that, and it feels like a growing, maturing player. I don't know if he has a better systems than these other three and better talent around these other three. He probably does as much or better than JKS. Certainly not Mensah or Jennings, but I could see him. Making a case for ACC Player of the Year or First Team All-Conference quarterback, right?
Well, you know, look, their schedule is extremely favorable, and that will help them. But I do think that's the correct order. Even from what I've seen of Jennings in this preseason, I think he may have taken another step. And I think Saga Politelli is the best pure passer of the bunch by far. And I think Mensah's won. I mean, I think Mensah... Don't believe any of this round three or round four crap with Mensah. Mensah's going to be in contention to be the top pick in the draft. He's going to be in that group of guys that includes Moore and Arch Manning, and I think maybe Mestemaker before all is said and done, and a few others. But I, you know, maybe even Trinidad Chambliss. I mean, he's a bigger Russell Wilson. But yeah, that's the way I have it at the top, the exact way I have it at the top of the ACC, and I think that's right. And the ACC quarterbacks are going to be very good. I mean, I had Chris Vezina, I think, 9, mm-hmm. which I think is fair to him, and I think it's fair given where we are. Who is at 5?
Ethan Grunkmeyer, and I was actually going to ask about that. Would you have him in that group, or would you draw a line there?
I am really high on Grunkmeyer, as I think you know, from all the way at Penn State. I think Grunkmeyer is a future round one NFL quarterback. He's 6'5". He has a big arm. He's accurate. He's far more accurate than Drew Aller was. Clemson got to see a little bit of it in bad weather conditions last year when he threw for like 270 yards under those conditions. He has to have receivers, and we'll find out about that. But I buy that. I actually think that's how I had it, I believe. But I didn't expect anybody else to have that. I'm actually sort of pleased with that. I think they have it right, which sort of surprises me, especially the Grunkmeyer thing. But yeah, there are three guys in America that sort of fit this mold of guys I think the world is sleeping on. One is these are not in order, but I'll go the ACC one first. That's Grunkmeyer, 6'5", super live arm, can make every throw, is accurate. There's just a lot to like. That is what a potential round one NFL quarterback looks like. The other two guys are Malik Washington at Maryland, who, again, is 6'5", 225 or 30 pounds, and he's my dark horse to win the Heisman. I think if you want somebody who's plus 30,000, there's your dude. I think he's Vince Young with a better arm. And then The other one to me would be Drake Lindsey at Minnesota. So I've ventured off the ACC path, but I think Lindsey is the most well-hidden secret in college football. It's not like Iowa always used to hide their tight ends by not throwing them the ball. You've got a coaching staff there that just wants to run every play and doesn't want to let their most talented player throw the ball. But he's also a round one NFL talent, in my estimation. So I think those are three guys that could sort of come from nowhere starting this year, and eventually you may see all of them get their names called in round one.
I love where your head's at on that. More of this from 3 to 7 today from Walt. Always good to hear from you, Walt. Yeah, great chat. Love it.
Stay out of the women's bathroom, Keanu.
It's Walt Tiptula. Oh, if you missed that earlier, you got to podcast it. Not while you're eating, but you got to podcast it. Final segment. I'm going to give you a couple more names. Now, Walt's intrigued me a little. I'm just going to throw out a couple names that I've got some questions in the affirmative about, like maybe some names that people are sleeping on a little bit. We'll talk about that, plus a little Braves preview as we wrap up the show after this.
The Roar's College Football Kickoff Show is back. Join host Scott Reimer and all your Roar favorites at the Southern Weaving Food Hall, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. Join us at 2.
I was in the lobby and you said, "Up, is that a TikTok? How would you grade? You're our social media person now. So how would you grade my effort there on TikTok?"
You know, I didn't watch all of it.
Okay.
I would say your camera was a little bit blurry, so maybe wipe that off next time.
What?
Yeah, your camera was a little bit blurry.
Are you kidding me?
It was a little bit blurry. Just a little bit. Just a tad bit. But I only know that because I go through so many videos and so many pictures.
Of course.
So,
well, now I'm really self-conscious.
But no. Just make sure you just wipe off your camera a little bit and you're all good to go. I'd give you a B+ for your first one.
You know, that's fine.
A B+ is good.
I'll take B+. It's not my forte, man. B+ on not your forte, that's good.
Hey, but reps in practice. Reps in practice. Keep doing. Keep going.
I got a couple other names. I'm not gonna linger too long on these names, but I got a couple quarterbacks that I'm wondering about. Okay. These are wonderings, okay? The interesting situation that I think a lot of people are down on, and I think it has some to do with the player and some to do with maybe what happened around him. The Missouri situation with Austin Simmons. If you look at the SEC order of finish from pretty much everybody, you're looking at Austin Simmons, maybe a middle of the pack SEC quarterback, and Missouri finishing toward the bottom. I think Eli Drinkwitz deserves a little more respect than that, personally. I don't think Bo Privula was that great. I think he's good at what he's good at. He's good at what he's good for.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he's some irreplaceable stud, you know? I think Simmons is quite good. Simmons got Wally Pipped at Ole Miss by Trinidad Chambliss, who is considered a top 2 to 3 quarterback in the SEC by everybody right now.
And he ain't 2 or 3.
I think Missouri has a great and the texter, you know what? I'm going to do the Mickey. Madam Jefferson. Madam Jefferson. Missouri. I think Missouri has a chance to be better than people think because I think Austin Simmons has been discarded. I think people think that Austin Simmons lost a job to some average quarterback. That's not what happened at Ole Miss. Not by a long shot. I think Austin Simmons is still quite good and can play. So that's number one, okay? You know nobody's talking about, and I'm shocked. I'm totally shocked about this, and maybe I'm just higher on this guy. I've seen him the right couple of times, the correct couple of games to be dangerous. I love Damon Williams at Washington.
Okay, and tell me why.
I think Damon Williams has a little razzle-dazzle to his game. That's a nightmare. The guy's 5'10". I don't know what he's listed at. He looks 5'10". Not a guy you're going to sit in the pocket and let him just, like, look over the offensive line and make throws, okay? That's not happening.
ESPN has him listed as 5'11".
Okay, 5'11". I think this guy can absolutely sling it. I would caution folks writing off Washington because Damon Williams is going to be as good or better than the quarterbacks on the field in almost every game he plays this year. Not Oregon. Not like there's a couple where you say no. But nobody's talking about Washington. If quarterbacks drive your football team forward, then Austin Simmons at Missouri, they're going to have a better year. If quarterback play is a prerequisite for your team being really good, then Missouri is going to be better. And Washington is going to be better. I just think those are teams, kind of like NC State, those are teams that people are not talking about at the top of their leagues that could be a factor because of quarterback play. And I think both of those are, both of those are fairly stable situations. Like Washington, you got some experience. Jed Fish's system is now ingrained there. And obviously, Chip Lindsey's the offensive coordinator, but it's Drinkwitz at Missouri. It's Drinkwitz. All right, let's talk a little baseball. Final few minutes. Braves host Diamondbacks this weekend. You can hear all three of those games right here on the Roar. 7:15 tonight, 7:15 tomorrow, 1:35 on Sunday. The Diamondbacks are a classic. One series, I look like a playoff team. One series, I look like I don't have a clue. They're exactly that, okay? Here's the last three series that the Diamondbacks have played, okay? They just got off a 10-game homestand going on the road, which that benefits the Braves. They split with the Padres, and essentially a split in terms of run differential in those games. They beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3 on a weekend. Their only losses in extras. They won one game by one game by two, very evenly played. Then what did they do? They host Colorado. They win the first game 9-0 against Colorado. Ooh. Just absolutely smoked them. But they lose the next two, and they fall to third place. They fall behind San Diego in the standings. They fall to third place. So right now, the Diamondbacks coming into this series, again, coming off of an embarrassing series, losing to the Rockies at home, you can't do that. Uh-uh. That is an embarrassing series loss. They are coming into Atlanta, 9 games out of first place, 6 games above 500, currently half a game behind the Phillies for the final wild card spot in the National League. This is a big series for Arizona. And if you look at what Arizona has coming up, I'm saying this because, to me, the Diamondbacks are the desperate team. The Braves are just playing well. But the Diamondbacks are a desperate team. They've got 3 in Atlanta, 3 in Boston. Oh. They need to go 3-3 minimum on this road trip to stand pat. Then they've got, they've got a couple of home series, the Cincinnati and Chicago, and then 3 at the Giants where they should be able to win some more games. The Diamondbacks tonight going with Brandon Pfaadt. 6-1 with a 3.36 against Chris Sale. That's a good pitching matchup. Braves should win that. But like I said, the Diamondbacks 9.5 games worse than the Braves. The Braves are a different caliber of team. The Braves think they're going to win every night. The Diamondbacks are very up and down. They're above 500, but they're very up and down. Yeah, they're just a different caliber of team. There's a reason they're in the wild card mix. And it's not just that the Dodgers are in that division. It's because they're the kind of team that can beat L.A. in a series and lose to Colorado in a series in the same week.
That'd be scary as a fan. I mean, you're playing, you win, and then you lose. You're so up and down, not consistent. That's scary to me.
It's scary to me, too. I root for a team that's down all the time, so I'd actually prefer that roller coaster.
Well, fair enough, but still.
Pfaadt. This year, already faced Atlanta once, 4 2/3, gave up 3 earned runs and a no decision back on April the 5th. He's pitched generally not great against Atlanta, but his team has bailed him out. He's 2-0 lifetime or in the last 3 seasons. He's 2-0 with an ERA north of 5.5 against Atlanta, 3 no decisions. So, again, he's been backed by good offense. Chris Sale, whose ERA is sitting at 2.20, quality start his last time out in New York. He is actually at 4 consecutive quality starts. He's had 3 shutout appearances in the last 5. And he has not faced Arizona this year. He has given up 1 or 2 runs to the Arizona Diamondbacks in each of his last five starts dating back to 2023. So he's pitched very well against against Arizona. Earlier this year in Arizona, the two teams split. Arizona won 2 1-run games. Atlanta won a 2-run game. The first game they played on Thursday, April 2nd, Atlanta won by 15. So there's a real run differential thing going on there. The Braves, 20 games over at home. The Diamondbacks, 3 games under on the road. The Diamondbacks have been really good against lefties, which is interesting. They're 19-9, among the big league's best records against left-hand pitching. They just haven't faced them all that much. They played 94 games against right-hand starters and 18 against left-hand starters. That, I believe, I'm doing some quick math here, I believe that's the fewest in Major League Baseball. The Braves should win. The Braves should win this series.
Should.
They should.
Should.
You've got Fott and Sale, which Sale wins the pitching matchup, and Atlanta's got a better lineup. Then you've got Eduardo Rodriguez against Grant Holmes. I'm not sure the Braves should win that one. I think if there's one game to monitor for the Diamondbacks, it's Saturday. And then you've got Mike Soroka on Sunday, former Brave, against Bryce Elder. Honestly, has anybody until today seen Mike Soroka and Bryce Elder in the same place? Are they the same person? Aren't they like the same guy, Soroka and Elder? So I don't know what they're going to do. Is he going to go in, do a wardrobe change, and pop out the other dugout? No idea. But Soroka and Elder, we'll find out once and for all on Sunday. Should be a fun series. These are good. These are three good pitching matchups, I think.
You know, I'm kind of excited to sit down and watch these. This will be quite interesting this weekend.
Braves are, for those who are wondering, Braves are a game and a half behind the Brewers for the best record in the National League, and I'm just saying I don't think it matters. You can follow it if you want to. I'm not trying to yuck your yum with 41 games left, but the Dodgers are going to be the one seed because they're a half game behind the Braves, and their strength of schedule, as we talked about yesterday, is considerably lesser than the other three contending teams if you include the Cubs in there, who are 4 games behind the Brewers and just 2 games on the Dodgers.
How confident are you in that, the Dodgers being the number one seed?
Like an 8 out of 10.
Okay, that's pretty high.
They're going to get there.
Okay.
They're going to get there. All right, that's going to do it. Great week. Love it. Kickoff show less than 2 weeks away. Make your plans to join us in Easley. God bless. See you Monday. Walt is up next.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.